Good morning and welcome to Countrywide. On this week's programme for you, vegetable growing in Limerick and how farmers can get involved in food procurement. On the hunt for dung beetles on a dairy farm in Laois. And the return of barn owl chicks in Mayo. Our text is 51551, email countrywide@rte.ie. But first, last night, the Irish Farmers Association and the Irish Grain Growers Group called on the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, to intervene in a decision taken by Agriculture Minister Charlie McConnellogue last Wednesday to seek to suspend what's called the straw incorporation measure on tillage farms where wheat, barley, rye, oat and oilseed rape is grown. Baled straw is used as bedding for the mushroom, dairy and beef sectors. It's essential during calving and it can also be used as roughage feed for cattle over the winter. But this annual 10 to 12 million agri-environment climate scheme, which was introduced in 2021 by Minister McConnellogue, seeks to increase soil organic carbon on tillage farms. So instead of cutting the straw into bales and selling it, farmers are instead paid to chop the straw in the field and incorporate it back into the soil. According to Chagas, this reduces greenhouse gas emissions and builds the soil for earthworms and microbes. Well, tillage farmers started to harvest their crop up to 10 days ago, and for some, this scheme represents up to a quarter of their income this year, and they say this will be wiped out and has been overnight. Minister McConnellogue joins me now from Donegal. Good morning, Minister, and thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Ella.
I think it's fair to say tillage farmers, certainly the ones I've spoken to, are livid about your decision. One told me last night that there is disbelief and anger at a level they've never seen before. Your junior ministers, Martin Hayden and Pippa Hackett, have come out publicly to say they don't agree with you. And now, last night, there are these calls for the Taoiseach to get involved. Can you explain why you took this decision?
Yeah, thanks, Ella. And listen, I know and understand the disappointment of tillage farmers in relation to a May announcement. This is a scheme, as you said yourself there in the introduction, that I introduced for the first time in 2021 as a pilot scheme, and then again in 2022. And then last year, I plugged it in and gave a five-year commitment of €50 million for this scheme, because it is a really good one and one that has a lot of merits and ensures that it improves organic matter in the soil and then puts nutrients into the soil and also stores carbon. And it has a very strong and permanent future in the tillage sector. However, as Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine, I also do have a really important responsibility here to look at the overall position of the agriculture sector at the moment, and in particular to make sure that we're prepared for the winter and spring ahead in relation to fodder. And it's something a responsibility I've taken very seriously during my 4 years now as Minister, to make sure that we don't have fodder crises in the country. And indeed set up the Fodder and Feed Security Committee as well to consistently monitor the situation with regard to fodder stocks in the country. And the most recent advice is that we're about 10% behind in terms of growth this year, and also that about 30% of farms in Ireland are currently in fodder deficit of at least 10%. And that's something that I have to be very cognizant of. Also, we have to be very aware of the fact that we've just come out of probably the longest winter we've had in many a year in the agriculture sector. It lasted from early October until late April, and almost about 7 months altogether where animals were housed. Now, thankfully, as a result of the preparation last year, indeed, I introduced a €1,000 support scheme for farmers last year to make sure that to help with the increased cost of producing silage and hay. But thanks to that, we did make sure that we had enough fodder in the country to get through that unprecedented long winter. But we are in a situation now where the reserves are totally depleted. Straw, for example, it was impossible to get a bale either for bedding or for feed this spring. And anything that was available was at a massive cost. Mm-hmm. But bottom line was it wasn't available. So we haven't had a chance because of the poor growth now to catch up on that. So it's against that backdrop that I decided it didn't make sense to right now against that in that circumstance to pay to plough straw into the ground this year when we might face a fodder crisis next year, and indeed where we could face a situation which we did 6 years ago where straw was having to be imported into the country in the spring.
Yeah, and yet the design of the scheme, as I understand it, allows tillage farmers to opt out at any stage, even the day before, if they decide instead that they can sell their straw or want to sell their straw to a dairy farmer, to a beef farmer or whatever. So in this way, it is designed to deal with those shortages, as you say. So why instead didn't you just remind remind livestock and mushroom farmers and all the rest of this and ask them to buy straw and prepare accordingly?
Well, you see, in that situation, against a backdrop, Ella, where I would be wanting to prepare and make sure farmers are prepared and we have fodder in the country for the year ahead, I would have been paying farmers on one hand to plough straw into the ground at the same time as where we would be advising them not to actually do that. My commitment here, and I said at the Gortsheen Agricultural College at the Chugach Energy and Farm Diversification Conference the morning after I made the announcement, I want to make sure we keep a €10 million allocated for this particular scheme. I want to work with and consult now with farm representatives in relation to how we make sure we keep that funding in the sector this year, because my objective is to make sure that the tillage sector grows in this country and that it's strongly supported from an income point of view. Indeed, I've run many schemes, including this one, over the last few years, and indeed have committed €30 million this year as well, €100 per hectare to every farmer that has actually planted seed in the soil this year for this year's harvest, as well in relation to supporting the sector this year. So I want to see the sector grow. I don't want this to be something, and will it work to ensure that this is not something that impacts the funding that comes from government to the sector. But I also want to make sure that we have as much fodder in the country as possible for this winter to be prepared for a potential winter like we had last year again. And my message really to the farming sector now, first of all, to tillage farmers is I want to see straw baled and available for fodder as we progress with this harvest. And my second message is to farmers across the country to engage with your tillage farmers and go out there and buy straw. And also to make sure that you plan ahead now, that you look at the livestock you have and you make sure that the livestock you have is matched to your fodder reserves. And also last winter needs to be our benchmark for the future. Every farmer needs to be prepared for the type of winter which we had last year, and farmers should look ahead now in that regard, with but, that I mean, in the, mind yeah. and go out there and purchase straw.
But with respect to, I mean, the 3,000 or so tillage farmers who've signed up to this in good faith with the Department of Agriculture, their message to you is, we've been harvesting for the past 10 days. We signed up to this scheme in good faith. Are you going to pay us?
Yeah, well, listen, I'm absolutely committed to making sure that the €10 million that I had committed to this scheme, that stays within the sector. Also committed to making sure that the €30 million that I committed to tillage farmers at the start of this year, against the backdrop of a very, very difficult planting season, that we deliver that for tillage farmers as well. And I will be meeting now this week with the farm organisations. I'll be meeting on Tuesday with IFA and Francie Gorman and Bobby Miller and the Irish Grain Growers Association. I'll also be engaging with the Oireachtas Agriculture Committee. I've been in touch with Jackie Cahill, their chairperson, because I want to engage with their members and discuss and consult there too. Because I want to look to see how we make sure we keep the €10 million in the sector, but we make sure we're prepared for the fodder and have fodder in the country for the year ahead.
Indeed, but for the farmers who signed up to this in good faith, will they be paid?
Well, that's something I'm absolutely conscious of, and I've been engaging with farm organisations now to make sure it's a very, very small minority, but I'm conscious of that, and I want to be fair to everyone as well. My only objective here is to make sure that we're prepared for the winter ahead. I'm not in a situation as minister where I'm having to oversee the import of fodder and the import of straw, and indeed all of the emissions challenges, as well as the biosecurity challenges that go with that next spring. I want to make sure it's available, but I want to be fair and to support tillage farmers too, and I'll be engaging with farm representatives now this week to consult with them in terms of how we make sure that we do that.
You mentioned the National Fodder and Food Security Committee, which you set up yourself. They met a few weeks ago. Did they advise you to change this policy, or was it Chagask, or who lobbied you about this decision? Because there is a sense out there, first of all, farmers don't understand why you did it, but they also suspect this was a solo run.
Oh, listen, I mean, it comes down to the responsibility I have as minister to make sure that I look across the entire agriculture sector and provide the leadership and take the decisions required to make sure that we're resilient and that we're prepared for all that's upcoming, and indeed to look ahead. That's a responsibility I've taken very seriously the last 2 or 3 years.
But who advised you?
I looked and assessed the situation, got full up-to-date information in relation to the challenges there with regard to fodder supply. And then against that backdrop, then decided not to proceed with a scheme which actually would reduce the amount of fodder we had in the country. And so it's a decision I took very well informed and looking ahead, and indeed providing the leadership that's important here to make sure that we don't have a situation we've seen in the past where we're short of fodder. And my message, and it's really important coming here, Ella, my message to farmers across the country is to look ahead now My message to farmers across the country now is to engage with tillage farmers. Barns are empty. Normally there's straw carried over from one year to the next on farms, but on livestock farms, but barns are empty. Farmers now should engage and buy straw over the next number of weeks and engage immediately in terms of making arrangements to do that. And I look forward to seeing tillage and advise tillage farmers to bale that straw as well so that it is available. And my commitment then is to make sure that the €10 million I had committed for this scheme, that I work with the representatives to make sure we keep that in the sector, but also that we all together work to make sure that we're well prepared for the year ahead and we don't have any challenges this upcoming winter.
Minister, I just wonder, when you stand back from this, the impact this is going to have for all farmers who've signed up to Department of Agriculture schemes. I mean, the message here is at any stage, and tillage farmers feel this was done overnight and will have a significant impact on their income this year. The message here is you cannot trust the Department of Agriculture.
No, well, listen, I mean, first of all, this is a scheme I introduced in 2021 to support the sector and have committed to €50 million over the 5 years for it. Indeed, last year, I increased the funding from the €10 million, which had been in the budget, to €16 million, so that more straw was actually ploughed in last year than had been planned, because that was there was demand for it and because it made sense to do that. But it makes sense right now against the backdrop of an unprecedented depletion of fodder reserves from last winter, poor growth this year, and a challenge is going into next year to make sure that we keep as much fodder in the country as possible and prepare for the winter ahead. But really importantly, I am committed to making sure that the €10 million I had committed to the sector through this scheme, that I engage now with farm representative organisations in relation to how we make sure that that stays in the sector for this year, because that's really important to tillage farmers. Listen, I mean, over the last 2 or 3 years, Ella, I've run a number of schemes to support the tillage sector. In the 4 years, over the last 4 years, we've seen a 6% increase in the amount of tillage land in the country. That has been under pressure in the last year or two for a number of issues or a number of reasons, but we're still 6% up. I want to keep that moving ahead now. I recently commissioned a Future of Tillage report to see how we can grow the tillage sector in our country from just over 300,000 hectares at the moment to 400,000 by the end of this decade. We have great capacity in this country to produce tillage really well. We have exceptionally good tillage farmers and we have world-leading yields in relation to the capacity for Ireland to produce tillage. So I want to see it grow. I want to build in the schemes that are in place and make sure that the sector is well funded and that incomes are well supported in doing that. But also at this particular point in time, I have to look across the agricultural sector and plan ahead. And that's why I want to make sure we keep as much straw available this summer and this autumn for the winter ahead, to make sure that I, as Minister, then don't be in a situation where there's calls on me later on in the year to actually import straw from other countries unnecessarily.
And can I just clarify something? The National Fodder and Food Security Committee, which you set up, did they clearly advise you to pull this scheme?
No, certainly not. The National Fodder and Feed Security Committee performs a very important role with all farm stakeholders on it to assess where we're at with regard to fodder. It's a committee I set up 3 years ago so that we're constantly monitoring the situation and that we're being proactive and planning ahead to make sure we avoid any fodder crises. They have got a full assessment working with Chagos in relation to the growth rates at the moment, in relation to fodder reserves, etc., and that's all that they have advised on. I then, as Minister, had to make a decision in relation to whether it made sense to go ahead right now with this scheme, given the information available to me in relation to fodder stores and in relation to poor growth rates so far this year. And I think this is the prudent approach. But as I say, really importantly, I want to make sure I keep that €10 million I committed to this scheme for this year in the sector. And I've been meeting with farm representative organisations now this week and consulting more broadly as well in terms of how we make sure we do that.
And finally, Minister, I mean, the fact it's been politicised. I mean, you heard the call last night from the IFA and the Grain Growers Association for the Taoiseach to get involved. Your junior ministers don't agree and they've come out publicly to say that they don't agree with you. How likely are you to reverse this decision?
Well, listen, I don't expect everyone to agree with me. It's not an easy decision to make. And people will have very, very different views in relation to it. But listen, ultimately, as Minister, it's my responsibility to look ahead, as well as dealing with what's right in front of me right now. And it's in that vein that I made what I believe is the right decision here, to make sure we keep straw available and to make sure that farmers, that there's plenty of straw available for farmers now to go and buy it, and farmers need to go and do that. But as I say, the important thing here is the €10 million funding for the sector too. And on the back of the funding, the Harvest Fund, for example, I delivered for the tillage sector last year where I were unharvested crops. I delivered up to €1,000 per hectare to farmers who couldn't harvest their crops. Also on the back of the tillage incentive scheme I introduced last year and the year before that, and indeed the doubling of the protein aid that I've delivered as well to improve and encourage protein crops, which is really delivering results, or indeed the €30 million that I promised earlier on this year for everybody who's planted this year at a rate of €100 a hectare. That's all funding I fully intend and am committed to delivering to the sector alongside the €10 million I committed to this scheme, because I want to see our tillage sector grow. I'm massively committed to it, but the right and appropriate thing to do now is to make sure we have straw available for fodder next winter, spring, because for the tillage sector,
Minister,
I wouldn't want the biosecurity issues that would come with importing straw next year either.
Minister Charlie McConnell, Minister of Agriculture, Food and the Marine, thank you very much for talking to Countrywide this morning.
Thank you, Ella.
Now, dung beetles with their shiny black armour spend their days moving through the pasture, breaking down cow dung. And as they do so, they aerate the soil, eat parasites, help reduce emissions of greenhouse gases and provide prey for birds, bats, foxes and badgers. There are more than 40 species in Ireland, and their number one fan is dairy farmer Bruce Thompson in Ballyfin in Laois. Well, earlier this year, Philip visited Bruce's farm one icy morning, and he promised that the Countrywide team would return this summer to look more closely at his work. So Brenda Donoghue recently joined a couple of hundred dairy farmers on the Irish Grassland Association walk on Bruce's farm, and he took time to show her how to find dung beetles in a cow pat.
Okay, so Brenda, these are dung pats. These are lovely, and that's a good one, right there. See the shape of it. That's perfect. Isn't that beautiful? Yeah. A work of art. Yeah. So, what I want you to do, Brenda, you're going to find a dung beetle in that pat. You're going to find it. Go get it. Get down your hands and knees, and you're going
I
to have
will
a look.
Not.
You will.
Okay. What have I to do? Show
right.
me.
The entomologist way of doing this is to pick it up, put it into a white basin, and divide it into subsections, and cross divide all the species in it. We have the redneck way, which is a spade and a bucket of water.
Okay, so what have I to do?
So you're going to pick up the whole thing right down to the ground.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah,
really?
And drop it into the water.
The whole dung poo.
The whole dung poo into this.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
That's it. Get a, don't be afraid to get a bit of clay.
Do you need more?
No, I think we should have enough there.
Right. So we have put the poo
in the bucket of
in
water.
In the bucket of water.
Right. Now, we just wait.
So we're looking over.
We're looking over this. Now, I know that the dung beetle is the star of the show
here. Oh, I can see.
Yeah.
How many can I see?
We're going to see all sorts of species coming out here now as they come up gasping for air.
I see. Well, I definitely see at least two dung beetles. Don't touch them.
That's a glove. It's a clear glove.
Okay.
Yeah. So you see this big one here, yeah?
Yeah.
If you actually look here, there's a tiny little one there.
Right, I see it,
That's another species. We have different species.
What's that there? That's not a dung beetle.
That's a devil's coach horse.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you actually saw them enlarged, they're actually a really vicious looking creature. There's another dung beetle there.
Yeah.
So they come up out of water.
Amazing. And Bruce, did you have a light bulb moment where you went, oh my God, the dung beetle's the answer?
I suppose my first exposure to a dung beetle was in South Africa.
Yeah.
And I saw this big roller rolling a big ball of elephant poo. I said, my God, wouldn't it be fantastic if we had dung beetles in Ireland and they were able to put the cow poo into the soil. And a couple of years ago, I was talking to an entomologist over in the UK, and she actually said that I have dung beetles in my farm, and I didn't realise it. So I went out and had a look at some of my dung pats, and lo and behold, there they were. Working away undeterred. Look, they're an ecosystem engineer.
Yeah.
So cow poo comes out the back of a cow.
Yeah.
That doesn't just disappear. Something has to happen that to get into the soil and made available to the plants to grow more grass for cows to eat.
I'm looking here. The longer we stay, the more
comes out.
Comes out. Yeah.
This isn't the best weather conditions to be looking for dung beetles, because they don't like that cold, wet, miserable day. They go down into the soil. So, but still, they're coming out of the dung pat, coming out in the droves. And the more of these we have on pasture, the better. We've been looking at parasite control in our cattle. And See, for a parasite to live in the cattle, they have to have this free living stage out on pasture, and that's where they actually spend most of their time. But we've never looked at that as an industry. We've always looked at solving the problem within the animals. So now we're looking at how we can solve that problem out on pasture. So the dung beetles consume these eggs and put them into the soil, parasite eggs into the soil, taking them away from the pasture, which basically means they're like the cleanup crew after the cows.
So how's your dung beetle population then?
So it's quite good on the farm. So the problem with intensive agriculture is parasite control is part of the parcel. So the problem is the wormers that we use actually damage the reproductive capabilities of these creatures. So by reducing the usage of those medicines, we can help increase the numbers. Now, here's the real thing. The dung beetles and any of these insects you see are bottom of the food chain. So your birds, your bats, badgers, foxes, they all feast on these little creatures. So the more of these we have in our pasture, the more potential food we have for our ecosystems. Now, we think biodiversity collapse is due to habitat loss, which is not incorrect, but the biggest loss factor is food. So the food for our birds and bats is more what we need over habitat. So putting up bird boxes is all well and good, and it does help, but we really need to get food for them. So this is where these guys come in, and it's for free.
Now, Bruce, wind's up a little bit, but the object is to increase the population of dung beetle. How do you know you're doing that?
With my dairy discussion group, we formed an EIP, which is a European Innovator Partnership, and we got a baseline across the farms in the group. So we're measuring the amount of dung beetles that are on our farms and what types we have. Inside my own gate then, I was catching dung beetles and mass rearing them, which is basically breeding them. And we also had an incubator that we were trialling as well for catching earth burrowing dung beetles. And they were able to get a cow pat into the soil in 72 hours, 3 days, completely gone into the soil.
Apart from what it does in terms of biodiversity, in terms of the food it provides, do you get a buzz out of it yourself?
Oh, I do, of course. No, it's good fun. I love seeing these little creatures. It's great being the one to get down and dirty and find them.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you, Bruce.
Great stuff. That was Brenda Donoghue finding dung beetles on the dairy pastures of Bruce Thompson's farm in Leash. And if you're interested in learning more, go to dungbeetlesforfarmers.ie. After the break, we look at how farmers might get a slice of the action when it comes to public food procurement. And we'll talk to a Mayo farmer who heard this snoring sound on his farm.
Email countrywide at rte.ie.
Discover the Zanussi laundry range at Power City. Big loads, no biggie with the extra large 10 kilogram capacity washing machines. For more information, go online to powercity.ie.
This weekend in the Irish Times, from the Republican Convention in Milwaukee, Washington correspondent Keith Duggan reports on 7 days that shook America. Conor Gallagher investigates the extremists orchestrating violence against the state and immigrants. Magazine hears how Dervla O'Rourke, PJ Gallagher, Tara Flynn and others turned failure into success. And in sport, Malachy Clerken analyses the strengths and weaknesses ahead of Cork's clash with Clare in the All-Ireland Hurling Final. Buy in store or get it delivered to your door. The Irish Times. Because you get it.
Explore Irish history from the 1920s to the end of the 20th century at the National Archives exhibition Society and State, Ireland Through Its Records in the Coach House Gallery, Dublin Castle. Starting with the 1926 census, the exhibition showcases the evolution of independent Ireland, from national symbols to sport, culture, infrastructure, industry and more. Discover how Irish society interacted with the state, reflecting social change and nation building. Runs until September 8th.
RTE. Supporting the arts.
Thinking about upskilling, a career change or returning to work? Springboard Plus and HCI Pillar 1 provide hundreds of flexible, free and subsidised higher education courses across Ireland. Learn skills that work for you. Visit springboardcourses.ie. Springboard Plus and HCI Pillar 1 are co-funded by the Government of Ireland and the European Union.
Tesco Club Card gives you the power to more. Treat yourself with Tesco Finest Certified Irish Angus T-Bone Steak, now half price. Juicy discounts on selected Keelings berries, now 3 for €8. Plus, spice up your dinner with Old El Paso kits and select a Coke 4-packs, any 2 for €6. Get more from your shop with your Tesco Club Card or app. Shop in-store or online. Tesco. Every little helps. Subject to availability, prices vary in express stores. Deposit may apply. See tesco.ie.
RTE Radio 1.
Crowded House Live. The Gravity Stairs Tour. Three Arena Dublin, October 14th.
Always take the weather with you everywhere you go.
Tickets available now from Ticketmaster.ie. Crowded House, live at Three Arena. Tickets available now.
Music updates on RTE Radio 1.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. We've had a bit of reaction to Minister McConnell's interview. One texter says to Minister for Agriculture, best decision to scrap the straw incorporation scheme. It should never have been invented. It's ridiculous to having to import fodder. And another texter says, I am a small farmer at a loss of 8,000, one third of my income projected, as grain prices are low and yields are down. The minister should resign. I will not trust him or the Department of Agriculture again. Our text is 51551, email countrywide at rte.ie. Well, when it comes to where farmers can sell the food they produce, we think of processors and co-ops or farmers markets and independent shops. But one overlooked market is public food procurement. The hundreds of millions of euro of public money spent every year by the government on food for nursing homes, prisons, hospitals and educational facilities, including the new school meals scheme. Well, across the EU, this market is worth an estimated 82 billion euro, sizable in both reach and force. So what's the potential for farmers to get involved? Well, Pat O'Sullivan owns a catering business called Master Chefs, and they sell into third level institutions. He recently became a farmer, a new farmer, because he bought 18 acres of land in Limerick to grow organic vegetables. During the week, I went down to meet him.
We bought this in summer of 21, in the middle of COVID. I'd been looking for quite a while and found this patch of land, and it was sold at auction during the pandemic, which was an interesting experience in itself.
So we are looking out on the land, and there is a small tractor going there cutting the grass. And then you can see in the centre part of your field, there are lots and lots of little tiny mini, what look like polytunnels. Mm-hmm. These are the vegetables. What are you growing?
We've about 20 products at the minute. Everything from brassicas to root veg to scallions, garlic, salads. There's a wide variety. Beets, pumpkins. Later on in the year, we're going to plant fruit trees and expand the range a bit. We've plenty of land to do that. So
you have not farmed before. You've never owned land before.
No, never. I don't know what it was. It just, that was always in the back of my mind, that one day I'd have a farm and we'd grow our own produce.
Given the state of the vegetable sector in Ireland for the last couple of decades, I mean, it's a dwindling sector. It's a struggling sector. Are you mad to get into it?
I don't think so. I mean, you certainly don't want to be looking for overnight success here. It's convincing my team, my senior team, that this is the way to go. Short of 90% of our produce has been imported. It's not good quality. The taste and flavour isn't there. It's weeks old by the time we get it. The pandemic really brought it home to me, because we were rejecting produce at the door of the production facility on a daily basis.
Can you give me an example of what you're rejecting?
Berries gone off, carrots melting in the plastic. You know, they were already going soft, and they go to liquid. You know, there's nothing in them. There's no substance in them. Like, we were sending back 30 or 40% of the daily fruit and veg order. Obviously, this is a massive investment, and we're fortunate in a position to be able to do it. But we said, look, once we are, and the time was now right to give it a go. There's certainly a market, there's a growing market there for it. It's certainly obvious at university, at third level, we're very active in that sector. We have been for a very long time. And when we survey the students and we listen to what they're saying, they're more and more conscious of what they're eating and where the food is coming from.
The government spends hundreds of millions of euro every year on food in hospitals, in schools, in universities, in nursing homes and all the rest. What, in your mind, is the potential for people like yourself or existing farmers to get a bit more of a slice of that pie, to maybe find a way into, for example, the new school meal scheme or hospitals nearby, like in Limerick? Is there a structure around which that could happen in different regions around Ireland?
That's something that I'm very interested in. So the more I've got into it, and with my entrepreneurial head, I see the problems. Like, how do you seasonally get rid of, for want of a better, how do you get rid of the produce in the 3-week period or the month window that it's at its best? So I've approached others in Tagask and in industry, in public procurement actually, to tie around with the concept of creating a biodistrict. A biodistrict is essentially a social network of farmers, growers, end users, customers, public procurement, joining the dots basically. So we're bringing together all the different market segments, speaking as one voice. And that's not just for horticulture, that's also for beef, that's for dairy, that's for milk producers.
So the idea is that all the farmers in one area, one district, so you could take Limerick, Clare and Galway, come together, be they farmers like yourself on a couple of acres, to big dairy farmers if needed, and look to routes to market, maybe food procurement, all the rest.
You need somebody to bring it together as a cohesive group. The problem right now is that everybody is doing their own thing and nobody is joining the dots. So I found it very difficult, for example, to get an organic milk supply because nobody's really doing it. The guys in Galway have formed their own little co-op. They've gone into Bia in Athenry. They have a number of units taken there, and now they have gone to the UK and they have sourced equipment where they'll be able to put like bulk tanks into a third level institution, we'll say in my case, and we'll be able to draw off that in bottles rather than having plastic all over the place. So it makes it easier. It's about making the route to market easy for people. The potential is we stop importing rubbish and that we go back to what the country was designed, the green country that we're supposed to be. We're far, far from it. I think we're growing like 7% of what we're actually eating. I mean, that's shocking. Like in France, it's like 55%. Unless the government show a will to change that, it's not going to change. So, like, we have to create a route to market. And if that route to market is public procurement, well, then it needs to become a government issue.
And I'm joined by food policy specialist Ruth Hegarty from Galway. Ruth, I just wonder what the potential is for smaller farmers around Ireland, especially vegetable farmers, but not exclusively, when it comes to food procurement and the money that the government spends.
The reality right now is that we really don't have a mechanism in place to focus and target public procurement on small farmers and to make sure that all of the public money that's being spent on food and that's going into institutional catering and public catering is being channeled to our veg growers or our small farmers. But it's definitely something that we can do, and there's huge potential to really use public funding and public food procurement to shape the food system in the direction that we want to take it and to really enhance farmers' livelihoods.
Is there a good example of a country where it happens?
Well, I think one that's really interesting is Brazil, because they made a really clear decision in Brazil that they wanted to support family farms. And they also, at the same time, were really trying to tackle food insecurity. So the government made a decision that they would set up schemes where they source food directly from family farms. They channel that into initiatives like school meals that tackle food insecurity and improve people's diets. they've been able to make really specific decisions about how that money was used. They've, you know, asked farmers to come together in cooperatives, so it's really strengthened the family farming sector. They've set really clear figures around how many women need to be involved in each scheme that's supporting women in agriculture. And at the same time, as I said, they've used this scheme to bring produce that largely on family farms doesn't use pesticides or synthetic fertilisers, so there's a benefit to the environment and to health.
What is the potential in Ireland?
I think a really amazing way for us to look at it would be to start thinking about food procurement in terms of kind of local and regional hubs, you know, where the government could really put supports into these small farmers and give them what they really need, which is some security around what they're doing, some guarantee of a market and a fair price. I think if we look at, you know, the farmer protests that have happened around Europe in recent times, really, if you listen to the voices of farmers, the overriding message is we want to make a living out of farming. We want a fair livelihood. And I think public money could be used really effectively to do that.
And when it comes to things like the school meal scheme, which, you know, by 2025 looks like it's going to be something in and around a third of a billion euro every year of spend, are there other benefits linking local farmers with schools, or is that pie in the sky stuff?
I don't think it's pie in the sky at all. I think we just need to make decisions about who we want to benefit from this public money and what we want the outcomes to be from our food system. And when you take something like, you know, a third of a billion being spent, that's the government's own figures, that's the budget for this programme, to roll it out to every school in the country, we really need to look at that and say what outcomes are we getting from it and who's it benefiting. And I think, you know, it should benefit, of course, the families and the children who are receiving those meals in terms of health, and it should go all the way back into our family farms and our small food producers who are, you know, producing with benefit to the land and to rural communities, and that money should circulate into those rural communities. We've got, you know, really significant amounts of public money overall in public procurement, hundreds of millions in this school food scheme, you know, 300 million a year, that is leaving the country essentially. You know, why would we invest all of this public money into buying in really, you know, the cheapest available food imported into the country to be fed to every child every day in school?
I've come up the road to the Galway campus of the Atlantic Technological University to meet Jacinta Dalton, head of the Department of Culinary Arts. Jacinta, you use public money through the procurement system to buy the food that you need to train 136 chefs every year. And yet what you're seeing is the difficulties, the blockages in sourcing from local farmers. What exactly is the problem?
I think one of the biggest challenges is first getting the message across that it isn't a huge amount of paperwork to get on the system in the first instance. We need to do better in terms of communicating to local farms and producers that we can help them get on the system if they so wish. And just as an example of what we did in recent weeks, together with my procurement team here on site, we set up a webinar. We sent out an email to all of our contacts in the region, and we invited them to come on a webinar. We walked them through the steps of how to get on the system, and then thereafter my colleagues assisted them on a one-to-one basis to get on that system.
So that's step number one, which is any farmer around Ireland who might be interested in getting a slice of the pie of the money that the government spends on food, get on this public procurement system.
Correct. They firstly must register on the eTenders platform. Then they will get notified if there are tenders listed. So if there's a hospital, a local school or whatever, that information will automatically hit them once they're registered. They can then decide to tender for a particular lot. So a lot might simply be farmhouse cheese, or it might be organic vegetables, or it might be beef, or it might be pork, or it might be chicken. And yes, it is possibly heretofore stacked in favour of the monopoly supply chain, who have procurement teams, who have administrative teams and so on. But my message to any farmer or producer listening to this today is, if they're interested, you know, knock on the local doors, talk to somebody like myself who would be more than willing to assist the process and get them on the system.
I suppose the most fundamental blockage is the financial one.
the decisions made by government about cheap food, and they'll buy the cheapest possible tender, or do they look for higher quality?
The MEAT acronym, Most Economically Advantageous Tender, is typically what has been used in the public sector.
And that just means cheap?
Cheap, it does. Yeah. It's ultimately cheap, so cheap food. We all know cheap food is problematic in the first instance, and it's causing so many of the issues that we're all dealing with day to day, from food waste to sustainable food channels and so on. We've moved away from that, so price isn't our top thing. So quality, sustainability, relationship building and so on are very important to us. So they're kind of our top three things. The other thing that we don't do as well, again, which is very important because it's in recognition of the challenges that farmers are facing from an inflation point of view, the energy costs, etc. We don't tie you into set prices for a year or 2 years at a time. We will do it over 3 months or over 6 months. And if there is something that fluctuates in the marketplace that's outside of your control, whether it's energy or grain costs or potato costs, whatever it might be, we will match those pricing once we're given adequate notice and so on.
And so we're standing in your kitchen here at the campus. We could also be standing in a kitchen in a hospital. Mm-hmm. Is it possible, from everything you're saying, that, for example, hospitals who buy a lot of food could do exactly what you're doing?
As it so happens, in my past life, I did work as a catering manager in a hospital. We did a radical overhaul of the procurement at the time, and we looked to make some changes. We managed to get a certain part of the way. I would say that, yes, everything is possible. You have to have the right people that are passionate about the Irish food system and the Irish food chain to work on the buying. And, you know, hospitals have sick people. We should be only buying the best of produce to feed sick people.
It's one of the big things for the government to actually decide that this is worth doing.
Green procurement policy is optional. The first thing that should be done, and I believe it's a relatively easy fix, is mandate for the green procurement to be operational immediately in all public institutions. It's 100% worth doing. Not only is it worth doing in terms of the climate crisis, but it's also supporting the land, it's supporting the economy. I mean, even if every small producer was to get 5,000 from me and 5,000 from the hospital down the road and 5,000 from somebody else, there are salaries in that, you know. Forget about the bureaucracy, you know, move away from that and think of the potential that exists in terms of relationship building, particularly in educational institutions. I'm very torn with the school meal scheme because I do recognise that there are a number of children that do go hungry to school daily. But it needs to be looked at from a procurement point of view. There is an opportunity for the money to be spread into local communities so that everybody gets a piece of that pie, so to speak. Farmers can be in schools giving talks, kids can go out on field trips, and I think just overall it makes for a better food system.
And finally, the bureaucracy point would put a chill up the spine of any farmer to think, I'm just not going to get involved in more bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. Is that necessary? I mean, is there a way to look at food procurement and think, actually, we can simplify all of this a hell of a lot more?
Denmark, I suppose we all look to Denmark from time to time when we talk about food and what they've done. They have simplified the system completely. They've just mandated that, you know, food is organic in schools, that kids pay €3 a week for a meal, that the food supply chain is local and the money has to be reinvested in the local economies. We could do it. We need to just remove some of the steps that are in place and just simplify it so that if I have X number of euro to spend in a year, that I'm given free rein, I suppose, within some structures to be able to buy from my local producers without question.
There you go. Some very interesting ideas there. Jacinta Dalton, Ruth Hegarty and Pat O'Sullivan. And this coming September, there'll actually be a meeting in Limerick looking to establish a new bio district for farmers, what Pat mentioned. Anyone who wants more information, you can email pat@masterchefs.ie. And we continue to get texts in about Minister McConnellogue's decision to have a look at the straw incorporation scheme. The advice from Fodder Crisis Committee was to book your straw and not pull the scheme, says one text. The straw that's going to this scheme is mostly unusable for feeding. That issue is certainly going to go on. Now, have a quick listen to this fabulous sound. There you go. That's the screech of a barn owl. And last summer on the programme, I spoke with Barry O'Shea, a beef farmer in Mayo, about hearing that sound one dark February night for the first time. He had put a box up 3 years previously, and after waiting all that time, he had a breeding pair. Good morning, Barry. It's lovely to catch up with you again.
Morning, Ella.
And also joining me is John Lusby, Raptor Conservation Officer. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Ella.
Barry, when we spoke last year, you described hearing the barn owls, but it didn't end well for them, did it? What happened?
No, it didn't. After a number of weeks, I contacted John, and John said he'd come down and ring them. And when John came and he went up to the barn owl box, we discovered that the four, we'll call them chicks, the owlets, I think is the proper name for them, were dead. And I thought myself they'd been poisoned, but John says no, something would have happened to parents, and they weren't able to continue on feeding them. That's why they died.
They died from starvation. But John did say to you, keep the faith. He was confident and hopeful they would be back. So what has happened this year?
Yeah, he was. I was like that. Kind of the winter passed, and another evening I heard the screech again. I was delighted. But it seemed to be in the distance, and I wasn't sure whether they had come near the box or not. And I only heard it a couple of times until I spotted evidence of the barn owl, their dirt. It's like whitewash. It's white and it's thick. I spotted it around the tree where I have the barn owl box. So I was quite confident then that they were back. So I had a quick peek at them in June kind of weekend, and I saw that there was three or four little chicks there. So I was delighted, but didn't go near them again, then left them, and I had a quick peek during the week there, and they seem to be big and strong and healthy, and it won't be long before they leave in the box. But I had a quick peek at them. I wouldn't be encouraging anybody to go near them because they do get frightened. Mm. You know, if you do go near them, they're just so. I think it's best not to disturb them.
But you must have been delighted because of what happened last year.
Oh, thrilled.
Mm. Yeah.
I was thrilled, yeah.
John.
One, sorry.
John, last year was a bumper year for barn owls, and you were a bit concerned about the wet and windy weather for the new chicks. How has this year's poor weather impacted them?
Yeah, thanks, Ella. Firstly, great to hear Barry's success story. I remember visiting him last year and he was so disappointed that obviously things didn't end well in the nest. But I suppose the good thing with barn owls is once they settle in an area, once they start to nest, you know, there's a very good chance they'll continue to use that nest. So delighted to hear that he's three healthy chicks now this year, which is fantastic. And in general, look, it's great. Barn owls are having another very good breeding season. It's still, you know, in the midst of the season. So it's tough to compare to last year. Last year was, as you say, it was a bumper season, but they're definitely doing well again. It's absolutely amazing to see, and it's not the case with many other birds, you know, because the weather hasn't been very good. You know, other birds haven't had a great breeding season, but with barn owls, we're seeing, you know, healthy broods. You know, all the nests are occupied. It's amazing to see, and you know, Barry's story has been, you know, replicated at many other nest boxes, you know, around the country.
And Barry, you did say to me last year that you were going to put up more boxes. Did you do that?
Well, I got the box, but with the bad winter we had and the land not being great around here, it wouldn't do too much travelling in the tractor on the field. So I have it, but it's not up yet. But it'll definitely go up this summer.
It'll get up.
But like, it doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't, like, having been successful doesn't happen overnight. Like I checked with a friend of mine out in Headford, in County Galway, there yesterday evening. And myself and my father put up two barn owl boxes, but they didn't have any success yet. So it does take time when you do put up a box. Like, I was 3 years waiting before I had a breeding pair.
Patience is the game, isn't it, with barn owls? Well, it's always good to hear of such a successful endeavour. So many congratulations, Barry.
Yeah.
And thank you, John Lusby, as always. Yeah. Barry O'Shea from Ball in County Mayo and John Lusby, Raptor Conservation Specialist. Well, that's it for this week. The producer is Eileen Herron. On sound is Liam Mullen. And the broadcasting coordinator is Mary Elizabeth Bruton. Until next week, goodbye.